Welcome, everybody, to Block Talk Radio. Welcome, everybody, to Block Talk Radio. How are you doing today? As we say, how you're doing. I'm your host, Sparky Lee, a.k.a. Lawrence Drink, and I am the founder and CEO of Legacy Programs Education Reentry. And we put ourselves in going everywhere and anywhere. We hold limits. We are all about making the world a better place by working together and by just being there for each other. And today we have a special guest. I am waiting for her right now. It's Miss Karina Fang. And Karina is she is part of Family Rights Organization, and we're going to talk about the harmful effects and the long-term effects of children losing their parents, being taken from their homes, and as well as the parents losing their children, you know, both spectrums. As everybody knows here, that I am a former foster child. You know, I was in over 20 group homes or foster homes and over 35 group homes in my lifespan. And that was from the age of 9 to 15. So I'm trying to get a hold of her right now. So what happens is, you know, there's a lot of harmful effects with the stuff that's going on, you know, with that. There's, you know, you're talking about mental health, separate separation anxiety. You're talking about nightmares. You're talking about, hold on one second. So you're talking about the nightmares. You're talking about anger issues. And a lot of times when we go to these foster homes, when there's a problem with one of the children, instantly we get put on medication, Sylert. Ritalin, you know, there's a whole list of them, lithium. And now the studies are starting to show that, you know, these children, now men, are dealing with, you know, dealing with the harmful effects of being medicated at a young age. I mean, you sit there and tell a six-year-old, we're going to put you on medication because you're hyper. What child is not hyper at that age? And so that's one of those things that we want to explore. We want to make sure that this stuff gets acknowledged and cleared up, that, you know, let children be children. And you know, it's just it's one of those things that if we do not sit there and address this now, you know, we are dealing with, this is a pandemic of children losing their parents and parents losing their children to an unforgivable system, to a system that plays. There is no thing as we're just going to take 6 months, as they did in my case. It was for years because they just kept finding more behavioral issues. And as they found them, they justified my home, which I did come from a dysfunctional home. They did nothing to make that home functional. They just sat there and said, well, we're not going to help you. We're going to be in shambles. We're going to take you. And let me tell you something, those homes were no better than the home that I grew up in. And every time I said something, I was ignored. I was, oh, he's just a kid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what he wants. So I believe, Karina, are you on right now?
I am. Hello?
Okay, I can't. Let's see. I see Karina's number, 650-350-9088. Anybody? Okay. So, but that's just one of those things that, you know, that I've dealt with in my lifetime. And now that I am able to speak up and not be held down by, hold on. And now that I, you know, I'm no longer being held to just being seen and not heard, that, you know, I'm okay with that. Hold on 1 second. So I'm going to, okay. So is Karina, are you on?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, nice. Okay. Did you hear, can you actually hear me or?
I heard part of what you said, and I really appreciate, and I find everything you say is extremely deep, and you're extremely heroic to go through all of that and to be able to speak out. I mean, you're a total survivor, and I appreciate that, and I support you in everything you do, and I appreciate everything that you are, so to be so strong and to stay strong that way. Thank you. And I wish all the children can make it through like you too.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Was I muted right now?
Just that first.
Okay. So the thing is that I don't know why I'm not hearing nothing from I'm having issues with. All right, now can you hear me? No.
Yes.
All right, so. Okay, so one more time. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a delay. I don't know why.
Okay, so the problem is that there's not enough awareness. Am I echoing?
No.
No.
There's just not enough awareness. In order for true education, awareness is not brought up. You know, we have to talk about the nitty-gritty. We have to sit there and talk about what's not being spoken of. And the system, I do believe itself somewhere. Karina?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I don't know what's going on with my phone.
That's okay.
Or my computer. As I was saying, the problem with the system is it doesn't need to be rewritten. It needs to be reread.
Right.
And that there are some people that need to lose their children for it, but their system needs to work together, and it needs to be more effective. So.
The problem nowadays is that these workers and the people affiliated with them in the system, they discretionally make their own rules, and there are also very good set rules out there already in every system, every city and county and state court system. They simply don't follow it. They just do what they feel like. And if the parents are lucky, sure. I mean, they follow it, and the children are okay to some extent, but there's no substitution for being at home with their parents. And whatever wrong that they are alleging the parents and the children, I always think that whatever they're trying to do to improve the matter, they could just fix and repair the matter. Instead of removing the children, they should focus on repairing the problem. And just removing the children doesn't necessarily fix anything. It makes the matter worse.
Yeah. Well, and they need to make function back and dysfunctional. You know, it's their job to fit, not just take the children as a first resort. They need to go into the home and assess it better and to go in there and come up with solutions rather than we're going to it's either take your children or not. You know, provide more services, provide more resources, more advocates need to come out and speak out about this and explain, you know, that, yeah, you have a good idea, but it's being misinterpreted. And like I was having a discussion with my wife, you know, there's good and bad in everything. There's good in the system and there's bad in the system, regardless of what aspect that you're looking at. So that's just one of the things that I look at as a former foster child, that, you know, how are you going to take me from a dysfunctional home and just put me in 20 other ones?
Absolutely. I mean, for me as a parent whose children got removed as well, I mean, they're talking about services to parents, services to children. As far as my case, there were zero services in the past 3 years that they removed my children. And luckily, in the middle of this removal, the children were able to get transferred to one of my close friends' home as NERFM, which is non-blood-related extended family member. And they were able to tell me what happened in the previous foster home. Now they're out of NERFM. Whenever it gets close to a six-month review period that they have to go through a hearing, so they figure out whether to return the children home to the parents or not. And usually about 5.5 months, leaving about 2-week cushion room, they'll arrange some sort of a scenario to entrap the parents or the NERFM, and then they'll remove the children from there and then take them to the next foster home, and then they have like some type of incentive to give that current home, and then it goes to the next home, and then there's like this remainder balance and they just keep it. And there's always like a big 2-3 week cushion room that a lot of money's lost and nothing goes to the children. And then one of the important aspects of these incentive, I guess, arrangement they have for the children is that my children firsthand told me, and this is like just in 2019, because of the pandemic and everybody has to stay back and lock down. But in 2019, when they were actually in the NERFM within this 3 years, they told me that every time they take them to shopping, the foster or the NERFM in the previous homes, when they were in the NERFM, they were able to tell me. So in the previous foster home, when they were there, they would get to be taken to shopping, and their spend limit was $5 for the entire store. And it's like, what can they buy these days? $5, right? And then they were supposed to buy something within that, and also to get the approval of the foster home as well. And if they don't spend it too bad, and if they were going to a movie, randomly they would take them to see a movie that they may or may not even want to see. And then they're forced to purchase Slurpees, one of those blue or red color Slurpees. And one of my children just don't have the habit of drinking anything with coloring in it, or super sweet stuff, or anything that's not natural. She prefer water or juice or anything natural, because we have this kind of habit, but not everybody does, but she happened to have dietary preferences. And then the foster woman caregiver said, if you don't drink it, you can't go watch a movie, and you're going to stand outside, wait for us to finish, and then we're going to go get you. So she said, if you don't get that with your own, with that $5 monthly allowance. Of course, they get anywhere above $1,000 per month for the allowance, because it fluctuates with the child's condition. So my child gets like over $1,000 or whatever for her incentive towards the foster home to spend on her. But instead, she gets $5 a month, and the rest, the foster home will keep it. And then for that particular month, she went to the movie and she was forced to purchase a Slurpee, and then she ended up with a blue she had to go to the bathroom and blue color came out, but she didn't, you know, it was like forced on her. And during the nights at their house, and she was freezing to death in the Boulder Creek area in Santa Cruz, they were placed in the mountains in seclusion. And then at night it was really cold, and they're not allowed to use blankets or anything, and so they were forced to wear really thin pajamas and not even allowed to wear sweaters or jackets. And when they got sick or had runny nose, then they told the foster home that they weren't, they were cold, they're freezing, and they want to wear extra clothes. Yet it's in the wilderness and really cold mountain area. There's no heater. And the home is like self-built. It's not even, I don't know if it's even licensed housing. If it's permitted, the walls are like wood boards. Anyways, they got sick and then they got constantly taken to the hospital for more treatment or more medicine. And then in turn, they get to have a higher incentive every time they get to the hospital. So those are stuff that are encouraged so the kids get sick. And then when the kids complained, they said, there's no such thing as temperature affecting your health. That's just a myth. And then, you know, the story goes on. It's just extremely excruciating in these, I guess, emotional realm to even hear about it. But if you would, I'll gradually tell you everything. It's just extremely shocking. And they're called Child Protective Services. I don't see anywhere that they protect children in any way. It's just a name. It's just traumatizing the parents, torturing the kids, and then they come up with a beautiful story about what they're doing instead of the actual truth.
Well, and it's when you talk about the six-month thing, in my case and my brothers, they would always come up with, if we acted out or got suspended from school or anything, they would blame it on my parents. And they'd say, oh, he has a bad – so the long-term effects of the system, a lot of times when they blame – when you – child, the reason why you act out is because of your mother, your father, that aren't present and aren't available to defend themselves. It creates a victim mentality where you could blame anything on that. Well, I blame my mom. So it's kind of like a brainwashing too. And they found ways to keep us 6 months longer. And it was supposed to be 6 months and it went to review and they said, nope, we can't, but they didn't explain it to us that it was that, you know, any details. It was just, this is what it is. Too bad, you're going to be stuck here. And we felt like we did something wrong. You talk about the mental anguish that we have as foster children. And one of the things that we shopped at the thrift shop in garage sales while she was banking this money, while she was sitting there, you know, keeping her wall fat. And we, I had a duffel bag, one home, and they told me, they bought me this stuff for my birthday, some used games, and they told me I had to leave all my stuff for the next kid. And so that gave me this mental vision of this where, you know, whatever fit in that bag I took with me. And so, and I went home to home with that, and, you know, imagine living out of a bag at, you know, 10, 12 years old, where you're just sitting there, you know, you don't have home. And then every time I'd walk back to the foster home, I would see a white car sitting in front. And when I remember when I walked back from school and I'd see it, I'd be like, oh, man, another home. But what changed everything was I got used to actually in a decent home. We were yelled at and a lot of stuff got blamed on it. But I remember when I sat and they told me I had to leave my first home and I cried. I sat in the back of myself, don't let him see you cry. Don't let him see you cry. And I promised myself I wouldn't cry anymore. And so from then on, they kept moving me. And I'd sit back there, and she would ask me, are you okay? And I wouldn't say anything. If I said anything, I'd burst into tears because I was like, damn, another home. So I remember this thing because I have a hard time moving on, like moving homes. I want to talk to her. And even though I was uncomfortable, I knew the nature of the beast. And so moving to a new environment was very difficult for me. It is to this day, moving jobs, moving, you know, even my office, you know, to another room is difficult for me. So so I hear you, you know, and I know the mental abuse that goes on in those homes.
When you mentioned the six-month review, from my experience, I mean, from a parent's perspective, is that we get a lot of visits during the 6 months, like towards that scheduling. So, for example, we won't be able to see our kids normally for the first month, second month, third month, and then suddenly on the fourth month we get to see the kids, and then the fifth month and the coming 6 months, and suddenly we get to see the children more like accumulated time, more compacted towards within the week instead of don't see the children or I'm not allowed to hear or talk or phone or anything with the children for the first couple of months. And then towards the 6 months, and then suddenly they'll give me a visit. And what they'll do is set me up on in a failure game. Of course, if you know about the game, you won't likely fail. But the situation is they'll say, oh, you right now my kids are in Tracy, California. They used to be in Boulder Creek, so they got switched all the way over to Tracy, California, which is about 70-ish miles away from San Francisco. And so what they do is they say, oh, you have a visit at 9 a.m. to, say, 10 or 11 a.m. with the four children of yours. Do you want to take it or not? And, of course, yeah, so I want to go see them. Then so I would have to leave San Francisco about 6 a.m., so I'll get there in time. And then they'll say, if you want to bring food, the breakfast or anything, it has to be sealed. And so I have to figure out where to go to get hot food early at 6 to 9 a.m. And then so I'll be driving halfway into Tracy, with say about 7 or 8-ish. Suddenly they'll call me and say, oh, it's canceled. And I'll be in the middle of the freeway and, you know, spending a couple of $100 on a bunch of stuff and gifts and whatever they can choose or not, or allow the children to bring home anything at all, and even some stuff for the workers to appreciate their time. And then they'll say, oh, it's canceled. And I'm like, okay. And so I'll drive back home. And then I have to reschedule everything. And then all of a sudden they'll call me at 11 and say, oh, are you coming? And then I'm like, oh, okay. And if I say, I thought, oh, you don't want to come? Or you thought, oh, are you trying to talk back? Or are you trying to be not cooperative? And I'm like, oh, no, I'll go. And then that's fine. So we can't ask them any questions or whatsoever. And then when I finally get to see my kids, and then if I shed a tear, they're like, are you trying to cry or are you crying? We have to cancel immediately. We can't let you see your kids because you're crying. And well, it's like the last minute.
When they did.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. When they did this to me, when my mom would start getting emotional and then I'd get emotional, they'd sit there and say that she was being a disturbance, and they would cancel our visits.
Absolutely.
So
they
I know
do
exactly
that.
What
and
you're
then, yeah, and then they reported to court saying we're not cooperative, therefore they can't give us a visit, but then they collect for the visiting costs because, for example, they get paid X amount of money for how many hours of supervision, and then if they get to cancel early, then they say it's our fault, and then they don't have that long of a work to, you know, write down notes about the monitoring of our every move, our every tear, our every action, our every word. And, you know, this kind of thing is just like tip of the iceberg we're talking about at the moment. And then because of the limited amount of time we have. And so sometimes I would tell my friends, say, in China or in Taiwan, since I'm Asian, right? And there's not that many Asian kids taken, but mine happen to be. And they're spreading it more into taking Asian children because they don't have that much, products. Right now, so there's a report that they're expanding into the Asian community. They're trying to get more kids from that group. Anyways, I would, during that earlier this year, I would call China or Taiwan or Hong Kong and tell them my story because they're like my friends there. I have a lot of family members there and relatives. And they're like, they do that in the United States? I thought they're a wonderful, like, free, liberty-driven, oriented country, and everything's, like, peace and beautiful. And I'm like, no, this actually happens. And they're like, we never heard of such a thing in China, in Taiwan, in Hong Kong. People cherish children like kings and queens. They never have such a thing in other countries. I don't know about any other country, but at least in Asia, they don't do such a thing. And so this is something that's very rampant in the U.S. And simply put, I mean, there's like FBI and Secret Service whistleblowers that's telling everyone, like, U.S. is the number one country that's doing this to children. And whatever happens to children after that, if they're not lucky enough to even get their parents back, and they would tell the parents, oh, your child ran away, or whatever they come up with, and then actually they'll find their child somewhere else, maybe a couple years later, being trafficked, sex trafficked, or murdered or enslaved in some other country or in some tunnels, in some railroad areas. So these are things that's very, very scary and very true, and it's still happening.
Well, and so what's your solution on, what would be your solutions to work with the system? Like, you had, because I believe there should be oversight in everything. I think there should be, who's watching the watchers? And like I said, you know, my wife works for the county, and we had a very heated discussion, mostly on my part. You know, there's times where these children need to be taken, and not permanently, but temporarily. But so what would be some of your solutions to working with the system and what to fix?
I absolutely think that there's a great deal of oversight required. However, the system itself doesn't like anyone overseeing their actions or scrutinize their reports. And none of their reports need to be verified in any way. I mean, anyone can just write anything on a piece of paper, and there goes a family's life permanently. I mean, their children's and the parents' bonds are broken, and they usually take children during birth, simply because they feel like whatever reason it is they can take the children, they'll come up with a reason, and whether or not there is a reason at all. And so the public would think they're doing a favor to the family, giving them some sort of services, but how come they don't help the families get back together or even stay together? If there's a problem, there's all sorts of ways. People are brilliant, you know, they can fix it. If, for example, the parents are on drugs and they need to remove the children for whatever reason, then they can go to the house and supervise the family in their house without removing the children, because there are parts of a child's life that doesn't involve any problems with a parent, because the parent can be with the child 24 hours a day and they could screw up that 20 minutes, but the rest of the 23 hours and 40 minutes are good, are valuable, and they are precious moments that should never be taken away or lost in their life. And if a dad maybe gets drunk or alcoholic and screw up that 1 hour of time in that week, even though it's not necessary and it's not tolerable to anyone, but, you know, if that happens, they should monitor the house. They put cameras in the house, they can Wi-Fi, and if the dad starts drinking and somebody comes in and just oversee everything and keep them in different rooms until he finishes off, and encourage him to go to AA meetings and different productive ways. There's many, many ways to help them out. I mean, if they just throw the kids somewhere, how do they guarantee that the foster home is alcohol free? How do they guarantee that there's no, that the other foster caregivers are not going to screw up? How do they guarantee the other foster children are not going to bully them on a permanent basis?
Yeah.
You know, how are they ever going to get tender, loving care?
Yeah. Well, funny
nurturing,
story.
You know?
Well, not really funny.
Mm-hmm.
They, I was in a home where the son was living with my foster mom. He was in his 30s, and he got arrested for, there was an investigation because he was molesting the kids that at the daycare that foster mom ran. And somehow it got spun off to the foster kids, you know. So how do you sit there and, you know, blame a molestation on an 8 and 12-year, 11-year-old that's, you know, how the system works? So you imagine going through one of those investigations at 11 years old. So it was, that's how the system works. So, yeah, the homes that they were sending us to, and I understand there's some foster parents that are really good at what they do. They're really loving, but those are far and in between as far as I'm concerned. What I went through in those foster homes were nothing nice. I was in barely one that I would settle for, but I would never send my child there. It's alcohol free, if it's drug free. The guy that was living, the other son that was living there, from the foster mom, he was drug dealing out the house, and yet this was never investigated. It was never looked at, and they quickly swept it under the rug when it came about. And any time that a child conversation about a home, we are disregarded. Our voice is not heard. They sat there manipulating. We're just trying to go to a different home. We're trying to, you know, we're acting out. And like I said, the medication, the you know, when you go to the site, they're not, it's not therapy to help. It's therapy to gather information, you and parents to sit there and just by keeping you in a system that plays for keeps, as I call it. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, me and my brother
and the
went through this for many years.
There's a serious problem about licensing foster homes. What they do is they train the foster parents to not believe anything the children say. So if they need something, it's a lie. If they tell them something, it's a lie. And if they don't, if they see it otherwise, they don't get their license or they don't get approved to get the foster kids in their home. So when that happens, whatever the foster children tell the foster home will predetermine that they're lying. And so there's no way the children can trust them or love them back, because if they want to, how would someone love someone and give them their whole heart and faith and soul, and they just say, oh, you're a liar all day, right? And that's how they're treated.
Yeah.
That's how the foster children are treated. What in the world is necessary to do that kind of thing to children? You know, you have to give them some sort of encouragement and faith and not treat them like leftovers or criminals or some type of liars when they're not. What if they're wonderful people? And by doing that, they just destroy them. They destroy their soul, destroy their trust with any adult. So when they grow up, they don't have that chance. And not only that, when they go to school, if they're A students, honor students, or wonderful, they win awards and all sorts of great participation with school, once a social worker goes there, they tell the teachers to give them a C, D, or F and make sure that they flunk every grade and give them the worst possible scenario versus when they were home and have all honor roll grading for the entire records of their entire life since before they were taken. After they're taken, they give them all these screwed up scores. But when you check their work, you check their homework, everything is correct. Everything is aced, and their behavior score is 100%. They do that dojo scoring in the school. And then once the social worker is there, they erase the whole thing and give them something else. It seems like the entire network is not based on truth, and they're worried about just everyone, at least. I don't believe everyone in the system is corrupted, but like say, I see so far like 90% of the people in there, even if they're not corrupted, they just go by the system and go by the books and go by whoever says something, and they just go with it so that they can keep their job, you know, and disregard the consequences of what they're doing because they just want this permanency of benefits involved in this job. So that's, you know, that maybe people should look within themselves and see if they should get a real job or get something that's more meaningful to their life and not create harm to families and lie to themselves thinking they're heroes for saving families when in reality they're destroying people. And destroying people's homes, hurting and injuring children.
There's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I lived it first, and I'm going to tell you the long-term effects of this system. One, I went through the prison system. I ended up with being told I was a manipulator, a liar. I took that, ran with it. I felt entitled. I felt that the system owed me something for screwing me up, and I lived up to that title. I fed that monster. So as I got older, and now that I'm home after 20 years in state prison, just yesterday, me and my wife were talking, and some of the characteristics that were happened to me in those foster homes, I carry with today. Today, I sit there and I monitor what my son eats. I sit there and run him like with an iron fist, and I see the resemblance in my upbringing in those homes on how I parent today, and it was a huge revelation, you know, that I had. And I have to, and I'm doing what I can to get away from that. But I see now how instilled those things are in me now as a parent. So those are long-term effects that we talk about. You know, those that criminal thinking, the manipulation. You tell me I'm manipulating, I'm lying. Guess what? I'm going to start manipulating and lying just to do it out of spite, because that's what children. And so, I mean, those are just some of the things that I go through now that I'm starting to realize now that I'm getting more into the family rights organization, and I'm starting to explore some of the stuff that I wasn't even aware of. So, and thank you for what you're doing. You are doing an amazing job, and you're a huge image in that arena, and your voice is boisterous, and you're going to do wonders with this. I see it, I feel it, and I know it. And so, and I just want to publicly thank you for the being the pastor for this little organization that, I mean, together we're going to do great.
Well, so far I've been pretty disappointed with everything that's going on for the past 70 years. No one has moved that far in trying to help out voiced for the parents and the children and everything in between their bonds. And so people that try to, such as Nancy Schaefer of Georgia, Senator of Georgia, she was murdered or died somehow, some way. And Mark Angelucci, who was trying to make a point to help out the family and children, and he was murdered. So, you know, there's pretty much four or five steps towards trying to help out the system and end this pretty much nonsense and it's unnecessary thing that's happening right now, and all for the whatever reason that they're trying to help family. But, you know, there's so much fabrication involved in the reports. There's so much deception going on. It's not even anything near helping any family. And so making the children believe that they're being helped, I mean, if they're capable, tell the real people, you know, real stuff instead of lying to people. If they're really smart, tell people the truth, you know, instead of needing to rely on fabrication to make things work. So I did what I did. And, of course, everybody's like, why do you do that? That's risking your life. I'm like, my life is for the purpose of the better. You know, everybody's got their purpose in life. And if they find a purpose, they should move on with it. Whatever's good for the community, good for parents and children is something I do. You know, everything parents and children is what I fight for. And so I've moved down to step four. I'm still alive, and I don't worry about my life because this is what I'm meant to do. I'll have to do it. If you know, it takes everything, I'll take everything and make sure I do everything I can for family and children. I don't want to give up on any children or any parents. They don't need to go through this. This is a natural law of nature. And our Jesus Christ all chose the wonderful parents to be parents and to have their children for a reason. You know, there's no good ulterior motives or reasons to take them away. And so those family bonds should be respected in every possible humane love, loving way possible out there. So as soon as I got this family rights initiative out, I wrote the initiative in California. I used my own money, my own savings. I did everything from my own pocket. And I wrote these laws, eight different laws, try to change the measure into law so that the family court and juvenile dependency hearings can have some justice involved, have jury trials, have scrutiny, have oversight. You know, these kind of things are absolutely necessary. And as soon as I wrote this, and suddenly there's like 184 different bills that signed into law by California Governor Newsom tried to oppose it. He wanted to keep it locked in. He wanted to keep the family courts and the juvenile dependency system closed doors and in secret hearings so that there's no witnesses allowed. You can't get additional lawyers. You can get a private lawyer, and if you want to hire a firm, it's not allowed. You can't bring in evidence. You can't this, you can't that. And so basically in court, you're just declaring to the parents that, and the parents' attorney, that whatever allegations against the parents to take and keep their children does not need to be validated. Or if they have no evidence, it's still accepted. And for the parents, they can bring all the evidence in the world. Court does not have to accept it. So this is completely unjust to any family, to any human being, against the Constitution. By all means, this is horrifying, but this is what's happening, and it's just getting worse. I mean, you don't have to imagine, but this is actually happening. One lone initiative that I wrote that tried to change 8 laws of the Welfare and Institution Code got opposed by 184 bills. 184 bills. You know, that's like billions of dollars spent on changing and trying to crush my initiative. 184 bills. Is that so necessary, right? But that's what's going on these days, you know. I mean, this group of people just want to preserve their steady course of income, and the supervisors of the agency gets an average of $450,000 a year in salary, and that's not even including bonuses, according to the head count of each child that they get in. So if they lose these children or if they return them home, they don't get those incentives. So they do anything and fight like hell to keep that money coming in for themselves on the suffering of on the damages and suffering of these wonderful families out there. It's an average of 40,000 to 500,000 children per year from California alone gets taken every year. So,
wow.
Yeah.
No, I get it. And you have a courageous soul in you, and you're going to move forward in a positive direction and bring change to not just California, but the world. And that, you know, I commend you for that. There will be change. So we got about 26 minutes left. Will you tell anybody if they want to jump on board and help out, if they could donate, their time, money, like how can we help you?
Well, first of all, the initiative cost, let's take a step back. They require 623,212 signatures to pass, and we can't just give them that number because, being a political management master degree from George Washington University myself, learning all these political campaigns require 2 times or 3 times that amount of signatures. What they do is they verify each signature and they throw it out if they don't like the signature, or it's signed too quickly or too wiggly. They don't accept the signature count. So we're looking at 1.2 to 1.8 million signatures we need to collect. And if we ask friends and families to donate their time to help us get the signatures across California, we have to give them gifts and appreciation after that. And usually it'll cost more than to hire professional signature gatherers. The signature gatherers cost $3 to like $12 per signature. And we're lucky enough to get the $3 per signature. But imagine, I mean, you can do the math, right? $3 times 1. Just put it in a conservative number, 1.2 million signatures we need to get. And so it's not possible for me, myself, independently to get a couple million dollars just for signatures. So that's why we need all the help possible. I don't mind if it's signatures or donations, whatever possible to make it through. Even if we make it through, we still have all these opponents. But if we give up, that's giving up on about 500,000 children per year. And because of the pandemic, so the numbers have dropped to about 40,000 a year, but that's still going up and down in that range. It's just horrifying to the children, to our future, to America's future. Yeah, so... yeah, we need all the help possible. And even for court right now, I'm trying to get an extension against Dr. Shirley Weber, California Secretary of State. She's a wonderful person, but procedure, if we need to get an extension, we have to file a lawsuit against her. And that's not what I want, but that's their procedure. And so I'm hoping to get an extension because there's really nobody on the streets when I go all over the place to collect signatures on my own. I try my best, and there's nobody on the streets. It's pretty empty, and when I bumped into a few people in the malls, they're like, I can't vote, or, you know, certain reasons. And so I would get a very
few amount of signature versus pre-pandemic times. And some of our professional signature gatherers are not wanting the money, wanting me to pay them back. But then they got sick due to the Delta variant with the COVID and the California fires across the state. It's just really hard to get to see any population motivated to do anything political. And, you know, and with all these changes with the recalls of the governor and various different political campaigns, it's really difficult to collect signatures at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's somebody at home listening right now going, how can I help? How do I even – so how can we – do we download the petition? How do we sign it?
So the initiative is on the website already. We have a website, www.familyright, that's R-I-G-H-T without the S, .org, O-R-G, F-A-M-I-L-Y-R-I-G-H-T.org. Okay, all one word, familyright.org. And they can go on it, and then there's the menu that they can click to learn more about it in any way they need, and to even donate to help us out or help the children out, say, because through us we can help the entire California. And the initiative itself, they can download it by pressing a button, and there's a sample there on familyright.org/petition. And so they can print it and just mail it in to me. And if they want to help with collecting signatures, just let me know. Send me a message anytime. And there's a phone number. They can leave messages or just email me. Yeah, so those are all open to anyone.
That was going to be my next question. How can we reach you for any additional information or to be of service?
Just go on familyright.org and then press contact, and there's contact information. I think that's the best way to do it, to go on that contact information, fill out the form, and I'll receive it. And I usually respond within the hour.
Okay. Thank you so much. You are just a big person, and you have a hell of a story. And it's like when I was talking on Saturday, just so everybody knows, at 10 o'clock on Saturdays, we run a prayer service that Karina here set up. So, and I'm fortunate enough to be the pastor of that. And we just pray for the families, for the children, for the system. And, you're just doing so much. And as I told you guys, you know, what we go through isn't in vain. There's a purpose at the end. And you have become forged under the hottest fires, and you have come out victorious already. And it's only going to grow from there. So I just want to encourage you and other parents out there, and the other advocates, just keep doing what you're doing. Do not give up and move in a positive, effective direction with under God's care and guidance. And I feel we're going to be all right.
Yeah, I believe so too. We need all the help possible. It doesn't just take me, myself, and our amazing Reverend Lawrence to get this done. I mean, the network is incredibly large, spread across the entire nation, and they're not listening to God. They're not listening to Jesus, and they're breaking up people's homes. They're destroying the laws. They're not following anything, and they're just discretionally doing everything on their own will, on their own in their own meetings, in their own way, and to set people up to fail and to destroy the children. So our next generation will have a different way of thinking that won't be contributive to the community, and will end up sometimes being dead themselves and before they can even grow up. And so we do need everyone on board to help out, and every single person counts.
Yes. And the thing is that what the system does is it creates – I'm going to tell you something with parole with – they make us reliable on them. They make us dependent, and we grow into that. And that's, and you're right. The next generation is at risk, and the generation after that is at risk. And we do all have to come together. We will, and it's just going to take more voices, louder voices, and a bigger march to you know, give people the options to speak up, you know. That I think that's important. I think sometimes in life we give people permission to speak. I remember when I used to sit in a group, and when I used to run groups, there'd be somebody there, you know, a guy with like four or five homeboys, and if you got him involved, you gave everyone in that crew permission to speak. You know, he did that by opening up, by them going, oh, maybe it's okay then. And I believe that works here too, that if enough of us sit there and speak out, that others are going to go, you know what, me too. If he could do it, so can I. If he could do that, if she can do that, so can I. And that's what we bring to the table. So, and for that, it takes courage, it takes bravery, it takes faith. So I just want to thank you for what you do. And one last thing I really want to ask.
Uh-huh.
For the families out there, do you have a message for them? The children?
Yeah, for the families out there, cherish your children in every possible way and hold on to them and take care of them as best as possible. And we don't take anything for granted. And for the people that lost their children, to stay strong, because if you fall apart, your children will never be able to see you again or have you intact, full. And it's very difficult to stay strong at this painful time, to lose your children and then to celebrate the holidays and the birthdays all by yourself. But just remember that you guys are still celebrating in your hearts, and your souls are together forever. There's nothing in the world will break that bond, no matter what happens, even if the thinkings are different, even if it's manipulated, even if it's created in every way to force the destruction of your family, just stay strong, because that bond inside in your hearts and your souls are there to stay. And so just hang strong, so that when your children grow up and we pray to Jesus that everything's going to be all right. And then when your children come back to you, enjoy the rest of your lives with them. And that's the time that they'll understand that they will want to be with you instead of growing up with you. Sometimes they'll cherish the rest of their lives with you instead of just the growing up years. And if you did have your children with you during the growing up years, you might, you know, end up with a child that'll leave when they're adults and do their own thing, and because they're grown up and they just want to be alone. But instead, this way, everyone will cherish the children when they grow up. So they're still going to be a long, long time together. So just hang on.
Yeah.
Yeah, stay strong.
And what's your message?
What was that?
Do you have a message directly for the children, the people that have experienced this?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Are experiencing?
Yeah, for the children, I want them to know that their parents cannot see you, their parents cannot be with you, the parents cannot give you gifts and hug you and talk a story to you to sleep. It's not that they want to abandon you in any way. It's just that they're not allowed. And they absolutely want to be with you every second. It's just that they're not allowed, because if they force their way to be with you, they'll end up in jail and they'll end up being prosecuted, and then they won't be able to see you ever again. So give them a chance, because their love for you will never change, no matter what people say about them, insult you, insult your parents about who you are or who they are in their hearts. You guys are always the best.
Mm.
Yeah, just remember that.
Beautiful message. Thank you. And you know, there are a lot of kids out there that appreciate this conversation. You know, and I believe that the title I put is From Parents Losing Their Children to Children Losing Their Parents to an Unforgivable System That Plays for Keeps. And so I just commend you for what you're doing, and stay strong. And how it begins is never how it ends, I promise. And there's a better day. So thank you so much for your conversation today, for your insight, for your struggle, and just for your openness to just being honest and public with us. So thank you for everything you do, and I just pray for you in the name of Jesus that, you know, you move in a positive direction and effective under the guidance and love of Jesus Christ.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everyone. Mm-hmm.
No problem. And one more time, can we get your contact information?
Yes, it's at www.familyright.org. That's right without a S. And just go on it and go under contacts and just shoot me a message anytime.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to it's been a pleasure. Great conversation today. I think it's very insightful. Hopefully brings awareness and is able to educate some people to move forward. You know, so I just want to thank. And so I'm going to take this time to thank our guest, Karina Fang, about all the struggles that she's gone through, the solutions that she has, and the work that she's moving forward with is amazing and groundbreaking. So anybody that wants to donate, please contact familyright.org, familyright.org without the S. And, you know, get involved. Let's get hands dirty. Let's all help out. No matter where you're from, let's see what we can do together. And, you know, I believe this is going to be a great thing. So if anybody wants to sit there and check out legacyprograms.net, that's my business. That's my organization. We are starting a foundation as well. And we are going to move in and elevate our direction and make sure that we're effective worldwide. So anyone that's going on, you know, wondering what we're doing, we are working with familyright.org to make sure that we spread the message with the right awareness and education to go behind it. So legacy programs will be working directly with familyright.org. And we are going to spread the message, and we want all former foster children, all parents that are going through this, to get up off your feet. You know, we want you to express your struggles. We want to know your story. So anyone out there, please don't keep what you're doing. And, you know, once you give up, you know, there's so many people depending on you right now. So, and with that, I have to go back to work. So I'm working full time now. I'm doing great out here and thriving. I just bought a car yesterday. So I'm very, very fortunate that what I'm going to do, and for your support of we do, and for all you guys, everybody that wants to get involved in this, thank you so much for your participation, for your sacrifice, your dedication to doing what you do. And like I said, Karina Fang, she is doing so much. She is so busy with just moving life in a different direction. It starts with the change that you start today. So for all of you out there, yeah, absolutely. I love y'all. Support is so key in accomplishing success. And without each other, we're just lone wolves. So we need to pack together. We need to sit here and gather groups, because we're in a fight of our life today. The government, they can't be trusted. We depend on each other, and then we need you. We need your feet. We need your voice, and we need your struggle and experience to get this on the path. So I just ask everybody, please donate your time if you can donate money. If you can't donate your money to causes and to things that are going in a direction that's necessary. Know your advocate. Know who you're donating to, your time or your money. If you can't speak with the director or somebody that's actually running it, something's wrong. If you have to go through a service with some nobody, something is wrong with that. You know, we want effective, we want God-driven advocates today. That's what's missing in the world. So I just want to thank, once again, Karina Fang. She is just amazing at what she does, and the opportunity that she gives other people like myself, and just go with God, you know, be blessed. And like I say, how it begins is never how it ends. And I want to thank everybody. New Vision organization as well, if anyone's willing to donate their time. We are still looking for a lawyer that will take on looking into prison abuse. This isn't just in California. We're trying to get a lawyer in every state to start looking into the brutality of the COs treating the inmates. This is a goal of mine, a goal of Leona. And so if anybody's interested, we're going to start with Massachusetts. If anybody's willing to do this, please reach out. You can find us on policyprograms.net or newvision.net as well. So it's one in Massachusetts, not the one in San Francisco. All right, with that, I just want to thank everybody, our guests, and thank you for listening and tuning in for time. Just go in a good direction. Leave people, places, things better than you found them. Y'all have a wonderful day. Stay blessed. Bye.
Amen. Thank you.
Absolutely.